Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 365. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in thisshowissogay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. If you are tuning in for the first time and you want to learn all about everything happening with Cleveland Pride, we are going to get to that, I promise you. But before that, we have two amazing guests on this week's episode. Let's get started by introducing the first one. Dr. Michelle Angelo is a sexologist, a therapist, a speaker, a professor, a writer, and oh so much more. Her primary interests include working with transgender youth and adults, as well as individuals who identify as genderqueer. She is an adjunct faculty member at Widener University and at the Institute for the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, and she is identified globally as a transgender youth therapist. Her book, On the Couch with Dr. Angelo, A Guide to Raising and Supporting Transgender Youth, is available online and wherever fine books are sold. She has appeared on Larry King Live, The Tyra Banks Show, and various documentaries on transgender issues. She is also on the advisory board for Gender Odyssey, an international conference focused on the needs and interests of transgender and gender nonconforming people. It's going to be held this weekend in Seattle. While we still have her in our time zone, let's chat with her. Michelle, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Ken.
So much to talk about. Michelle, are you ready?
I am ready.
So I started off describing you as a sexologist, a therapist, a speaker, a professor, a writer. Is there one title that you gravitate towards more than all the others?
Well, mom is the primary one, but my passion professionally is really around the work I do in the therapeutic realm. So I tend to call myself a therapist above all other things.
I have to jump right into it because you just used the mom label. I would imagine being a mom changes the way that you approach this work. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. You know, it's amazing because kids, and I think this is probably universal, all kids, you know, until they're tainted by the cynicism in our society, are just really loving little human beings. And so my work with the trans community, and in particular with trans youth, has somewhat been framed around my love and passion as a mom, because I see many of these kids who have loving families but who still are really struggling to accept them. And it's unfortunate because, again, they're just such beautiful human beings who really are just looking for unconditional love and support from the people around them.
Well, let's go back a few years. When little Michelle Angelo was running around, was the therapist dream, was that the dream? Were you giving out free advice to people? How did that come about?
No, I think I really got that. I mean, yes, I was, but I didn't know that it was about being a therapist. To clarify, I think it was more that's how my parents did things. We were kind of the go-to family, the people who everybody wanted to hang out at our place. I just had really cool, amazing parents who I knew unconditionally loved me, and I think that all of my friends knew unconditionally loved them. So it was just part of what I was raised with was, you know, somebody needs help, then you help them if you have it to give.
Because I'm picturing you with the little 5-cent stand where people go and pay their five
right.
cents. And is that possible? No?
Probably not.
Okay.
But it's kind of a fun image.
All right, I'm going to go with that. I'm keeping that image. At what point was there a pivotal point where you decided, you know what, this is what I'm going to focus on?
Yes, actually there was. I was in graduate school. I went to the University of Pennsylvania here in Philadelphia, and I was in a master's program at the time where the professor had a panel of transgender individuals come in and just tell their stories to us. And I had a couple of friends who were transgender, but I really never, I guess I just didn't have the language to speak to them or to even really understand the experience until I had the opportunity to hear these folks. And when I heard their stories and when I heard their struggles and how they got through everything that they got through. I went back to my friends after, literally after class that day, called one of my friends who's trans, and I just said, my gosh, I can't believe I've never talked to you about your experience, and how can I be more supportive, and how can I be an ally? And I identify as a queer woman, but I really was in the dark until that moment, 1993, when these folks really opened my eyes.
Look at that. What I didn't say in your bio, one of the accomplishments that I love as a college professor myself, I love the fact that you helped develop the first graduate course in the U.S. that focused on clinical issues in transgender communities. We've talked about it so much over the years on this show that in various different, in particular, graduate preparatory contexts, there's not as much information being given out to our future clinicians as there possibly could be, correct?
That's absolutely correct. I have interns and I have people asking to intern with me every semester who are incredibly intelligent people but are absolutely, as I was, absolutely clueless about it, their transgender experience and how to continue to be just a good general clinician but with more of a focus on some unique experiences that trans folks have.
I would imagine, and you have to tell me if I'm wrong, we know that the language has changed, you know, in the past couple of years, as people are more open about their lives, as there's more media coverage, as there's more research. How difficult is it to stay on top of all of these changes in order to be an effective therapist?
It definitely is challenging. It's something that I attempt very consciously to stay on top of, but I certainly know that, you know, I feel like every month there's a new, you know, identity label that someone has claimed and owned, and that's great, and people certainly deserve to do that. But there are also times when, and this is no one's fault, but you know, I'll own this, that you know, I might make an inaccurate assumption around a label, around a person's identity, just because it's one that slips past me. So and the politics behind this and these ridiculous fear-mongering people who are talking about keeping people out of bathrooms. And it's just, it's silly and sad.
Yeah. You have, anytime there's a story out there about this is the age at which someone is identifying as genderqueer or transgender, I feel like we invariably have people who are responding, well, you can't possibly know at that age. What are you seeing in your practice with regard to acceptance and an age where some identity starts to form?
I see people coming in, young people coming in, and I've been doing this for about 18 years, and so there's obviously been a pretty drastic paradigm shift over the last 18 years, but right now I see young people coming in at three primary times in development. One is before they even begin school, so, you know, pre-K, kindergarten age. One is around puberty, and then one is sometime near the ending of high school.
And I would imagine you have to work pretty closely with their parents as well.
Absolutely. They're an integral part of the puzzle. You know, parents and caregivers, they have to be on board in order for optimal success with the transition. And transition can mean anything. It can mean a social transition where the young person is, you know, changing their name and changing their pronouns, and that's it. It can be a medical transition where somebody's blocking puberty, or if they're a little bit older, where they're beginning cross-sex hormones or even surgery. So any level of transition, parents really have to be on board. You know, the kind of funny story that I like to tell, and it's becoming almost an expectation I have of some parents when they come in, is because this is scary stuff for parents. This isn't about a parent being a mean person or a bad caregiver. It's about, I don't want my kid to be killed, or I
right.
don't want my kid to be bullied.
Right.
And so, but the funny part is, and I just never thought I would live to see this day, is that almost across the board, parents will come in and say, we're hoping that he's just gay. You know, it's just like, I really never thought I'd, you know, hear somebody praying to be gay. But they know that, you know, we've come a long way, and that now it's certainly, obviously, easier on many levels to be gay than it is to be trans. So I really try to enlist the parents wholeheartedly in the process, because that's what the kid needs. The kid has been brave enough to share this incredibly scary thing with his or her parents. And I hear it from so many young people that they really are worried that they're going to be less lovable once they tell their parents. And so to have the parents be as on board as possible, to have them get adequate support themselves, because, you know, the thing about it is, and I can understand this as a parent, we have, and this isn't right, but it just seems to be a fact, that we have these perceptions and these assumptions about what our children are going to turn out to be. And this really flips it upside down for a lot of parents. So they need to have, you know, I call it a grieving process. It's not a grieving process, obviously, as in your child is dying, but just more the perception that you had of your child is changing.
Yeah. You know, I'm a professor of education, so much of my life is focused on how do we make schools safer for all of our students. And I know that you've spoken to any number of school communities. What information do these school communities need that they don't currently have, by and large, in order to be more supportive of our gender nonconforming students?
You know, it's usually not the kids who need the information, it's the adults. And
yeah.
So I speak both to students and to faculty and staff, and I really just talk to them about, you know, this kid is coming to school for the same reason that every other kid is coming to school, to learn and to socialize and to understand him or herself more effectively. And so just, you know, bottom line, and this sounds like it is common sense, but I think a lot of us lose common sense when it comes to this particular community, is just be kind. Even if the biggest pushback I get is people's so-called religious beliefs around this. And so even if this is something that, from a religious perspective, you cannot support, you still need to be kind, and you still need to see this individual as a human being. And they're really, it takes a lot of energy for a lot of these young people to just get out of bed and show up at school because they're worried that they're going to be bullied, or they're worried that they're going to have to hold it and not go to the bathroom because somebody's going to give them a hard time. So there are so many things that those of us who are cisgender take for granted that many of these folks have to think about and worry about every day of their lives.
Again, listeners, we are here with Dr. Michelle Angelo, author of the book On the Couch with Dr. Angelo, A Guide to Raising and Supporting Transgender Youth. I feel like we can't talk about these issues with at least highlighting that some of your colleagues out there, Michelle, who apparently have actual degrees, are advocating for reparative therapy as something that could possibly work. To them, Dr. Michelle Angelo says what?
Well, I don't know if I can say it on the air, but I say it doesn't work. It never has worked. And unfortunately, these folks who are forced to go through this ridiculous quackery end up, you know, in my office or a colleague's office 5 or 10 or 30 years later. And unfortunately, a significant amount of damage has been done by the time they show up.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk so much about those individuals who are practitioners of those types of therapy, and it's radio, so people can't see me putting therapy in air quotes. But I would imagine that what it does is it appeals so much to those parents who are looking for that safety that you spoke about.
It does, and I hear that often. I mean, the good news and the thing that I take comfort in is that a lot of parents now, and in part because of some, you know, this conversation we're having today, some of the media coverage that's out there now that's less sensational, parents are getting it that doesn't work anymore, and that all you're doing in those situations where you're trying to help your child, and I believe parents are genuinely trying to help their kids in those situations, but what you're doing is you're instilling shame, and that's a really difficult hurdle to get over, especially for a young person.
Yeah. You're talking about media coverage. I watched you on Larry King and Tyra Banks, but I have to tell you, I was most amused by your appearance on Dr. Phil, in particular, the clip that you have on your website, because I would argue that you said the most on that couch, but you also said the least. And you said the most, I feel, by saying the least. You have to know that you have some very telling facial expressions. I don't think that you're I don't know if anyone's ever said this to you before, but I don't think you're probably a very good poker player.
I was just about to say, I don't do well in poker. I have a really hard time, particularly when I feel so passionate about something, and when I recognize, and certainly in that episode, and I could tell you some crazy behind-the-scenes stories with those folks, but I just couldn't believe, again, just the injustice and the all of this in the name of their Christian values.
Right.
That the folks who were sitting across from me were ranting about, and the terrible, mean-spirited things they would say once the cameras were not on to the mother who was on the show with us. Just, I couldn't stay composed. I guess I'll just leave it at that.
You were our Greek chorus. I loved it. It was great. You were saying the most there on that couch. But I would imagine that those issues of faith have come up time and time again in the work that you do, navigating that intersection between faith and gender identity and gender expression.
Absolutely. It comes up on a regular basis. And the other thing that I'm excited about is that shifting as well, that a lot of fairly mainstream religious institutions are beginning to educate themselves and understand that this isn't pathology, that this isn't sin, that this is truly and authentically someone's inherent identity. And so there's less of the rhetoric around, you know, praying this out of someone. And they're recognizing that transgender folks, just like cisgender folks, there are some really great people out there, and there might, you know, are some not so great people out there, but they still, you know, if one believes in a God, that they still are as worthy to be included and as a part of that institution as anybody else.
Yeah. Well, you have a bit of jet lag in your immediate future as you head to Seattle for Gender Odyssey. Tell everybody about Gender Odyssey.
Oh, sure. It's one of my favorite conferences. I do about 15 conferences where I travel around and speak each year, and it definitely it's on the top of my list every year. It's a fantastic gathering. It happens every year in Seattle, and it's just a really wonderful group of folks. I'll be there speaking tomorrow and Thursday to professionals, so to clinicians and physicians and other folks who are just in the world of mental health and other healthcare. And we'll be talking about how best to focus your practice, or at least to be inclusive in your practice with trans folks. And then on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll be speaking more, and many others will be speaking more at the community days. So it'll be families and community members who are coming in just to learn more about how to be as supportive as possible to their family member who's trans.
Yeah. Those conferences are so uplifting to me, but then there's also the part where they're a little bit difficult, because I find, and I'm feeling pretty confident you found the same, that the few days after the conference, when you return to normal life where that level of discourse is not on the same level, it's a little bit difficult to adjust to that, because you want everybody talking in the same way that they did at these bubbles of a conference where so much great work is done.
Yes. It's true. I'm in a bit of a different situation in the sense that I get to do this work every day, and so I get to be uplifted by these amazing families on a daily basis. So the downside is not quite as dramatic for me, but I certainly hear it from the families who attend the conference. I'll get emails or phone calls, you know, days and weeks after the conference from parents saying, we just felt so safe and comfortable, or our child felt so content and so confident, and then we got home and they went back to, you know, same old thing where they're not as confident anymore, not as ready to go out into the world. So I get that. I feel thankful that I don't have quite as dramatic of an experience as some folks do, but I certainly talk to people who have a pretty tough time adjusting.
Nice. Well, as we look ahead and as people go out and get your book, On the Couch with Dr. Angelo, A Guide to Raising and Supporting Transgender Youth, for all of our listeners who are thinking, well, I have to do more. There has to be more than I can do to move the needle and make this a more welcoming place for trans youth. Where would you tell people to get started?
Well, there are, again, a number of conferences that people can attend, and there are also organizations out there. If you're looking for organizations for youth, certainly the Trans Youth Family Alliance is a great one. They really have done a wonderful job supporting families as they're understanding their child or their family member's identity. There's Trans United is another organization that has recently just been started, and they're really doing a lot of wonderful work around transgender education. And honestly, those organizations are great, and I personally support them, and I think they deserve to be supported. But you can also just have conversations when you're having coffee with someone, or you're on a plane, or, I've got a 5.5 hour plane ride ahead of me in a couple of hours, and invariably, I typically end up meeting somebody in an airport. And they'll be stuck beside me for 5.5 hours on the plane, and they'll ask me what I do. And I tell them, and I say, I work with transgender individuals and primarily transgender youth. And sometimes our conversation that ends there, but fortunately, a lot of the time they'll say, oh, I don't think I've ever met anyone who's transgender. Tell me about that. What's that like? What is that experience? And I get a few hours just to be able to hopefully open someone's eyes so that the next time someone makes a disparaging comment, they can say, no, actually, I know that that's not true. I know that these folks are amazing and brave, and they deserve our respect and not, our negative comments.
Yeah. Well, I want to end by talking about self-care. The work that you do, I would imagine, is quite draining, right? You're talking to sometimes families in crisis. You're talking to individuals perhaps who are struggling. I'm sure you are talking to individuals who are emerging with such a positive identity. But for you as an individual, it takes a toll in doing this work. Talk to our listeners about the importance of self-care and how you navigate through motivating yourself to keep doing this incredible work.
Yeah, well, thank you. That it is important. It's easier now. I think that just with time and experience, it certainly gets easier to, probably just because I'm getting older and I recognize that I can't keep going the way I used to go. So I very intentionally take time out. I have an adult daughter, but I also have two younger children. And so it's difficult to be focused on much else when you have a 3 and a 5 year old running around wanting your attention. But it is important for anyone to be able to, I work hard and I play hard. And so it's, I try to be all in when I'm facilitating a workshop or in my therapy office. But then I also want to, not forget about the struggles that people have, but just kind of turn off that part of my brain to say, I need to go for a run or get to the gym or take a swim or take my kids to a museum or do something else so that I can really just recharge and be ready then for the next day.
Nice. I'm asking you one more because you brought up your young children, and it made me think, for those of us who have children, period, and we want to introduce them to content, maybe children's books or conversations or any type of media that can then breed the most accepting society that we can possibly get to in a few years, how do you start having those conversations with all children, regardless of their gender identity?
My kids are big. They love books. And so there are a couple of pretty good children's books out there, even little kid books out there. My Princess Boy, and I think it's called Be Yourself, Just Be Yourself or something like that, but it's a book about a gender nonconforming young person. So occasionally we'll read those books, but then we also just talk in more general terms about respecting people and allowing people to have their own identity. I say to people, when people say, oh, do you have kids? And I say, yes, I have, as far as I know, I have three girls. Nobody's told me differently. So you know, it's, we just kind of try to keep it an open conversation about that. That, you know, there are lots of different people in the world, and my kids happen to have two moms, and some kids have a mom and a dad, and, you know, and some kids have a mom, but then the mom realizes that she actually is male. And so, you know, we just have, and kids that age, again, they're so open and malleable, and they just want to do the right thing. And so it's kind of a non-issue if you make it, non-issue in the sense that it doesn't have to be traumatic or dramatic. A lot of people come in saying, you know, if they have a trans child, oh my goodness, but how are my other children going to handle this? And I'll say, they'll handle it the way that you present it. So how you model it is how they'll handle it. And so if you model it as, well, your brother is actually now your sister, and here's the experience, and here's how we handle this as a family, then the kids generally will go along for the ride. If it's, oh my gosh, this is going to be a tragic event, and, you know, it's very drama-filled, then the kids are going to be, of course, be have generally a more difficult time with it.
There it is. There it is. All right, listeners, this is what you guys need to do. Go on over to genderodyssey.org, and you can learn all about that incredible conference there. And you must, of course, go to michelleangelo.com. That's Michelle with one L and Angelo with two L's. We will certainly link to it. Right there on your website, Michelle, you have this quote: when I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid. One of my favorite Audre Lorde quotes, I have to tell you, this is the work that you are doing. You are using your strength in the service of your wisdom. You are really making a difference out there. Such important work. And we love you for it, Michelle, and we want you to keep doing it.
Thank you very much, Ken. It was great being with you today.
All right, folks, and we are back with our second amazing guest of this week's jam-packed show. Jay Tyler is a musical artist with some pretty darn strong beats. He is featured on the MTV artist page and is currently reigning as the best gay musician of Atlanta by the readers of Georgia Voice. He has headlined all over Georgia, and now he is set to break out into markets everywhere. His debut single, Live Out Loud, is available right this very second on iTunes, and the official music video will be out on August 8th. Exciting times for him. Now he's here with us. Jay Tyler, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you guys for having me.
We have a little bit of ground to cover, sir. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm absolutely ready.
So just like all of your colleagues who have been on the show before you, tell our listening audience why the medium of music to get your voice out there.
So growing up, I always was drawn to music ever since I was little. When I was 2 years old, I started singing and getting involved with music, and that was the only way that I felt natural to express myself in the realm of music. So I just started, you know, playing around with all the genres, and I grew up on country and rock and roll, so nobody really expected me to be a rapper. But yeah, I just moved into different genres, and once I found this one, I knew this one was one.
Tell us more about that. So, you know, because I don't know if you know this, rap is very much not country or rock and roll. When you hit on rap, how did you know that it clicked for you?
So I'm a very fast-paced person. I like to move fast, and I like to be creative, and I like to express myself in a fast-paced way. And I always knew, you know, like my country songs and my pop songs that I wrote as a kid, they were always faster than the other ones that were being played. You know, it wasn't just me singing or whatever. It was me more talking. And I got involved with rap after one person who was in my high school class. You know, I learned a popular verse in a popular song called Look At Me Now with Busta Rhymes. I learned that fast verse. And, you know, it was popular for my high school classmates to learn it. And once I once I learned it and got it down and I, you know, performed it before class, this one girl told me that I would never be a rapper. And so, you know, it didn't really upset me or it didn't really hurt me. I just couldn't stop thinking about it. So I went home that night and I wrote my first verse, and I just fell in love with how creative it was as compared to all of the other genres and how natural it felt for me. And so I just started practicing every day, and I just fell in love with it more and more every single day. And that's, you know, that's how I decided that I wanted to do this, because it just felt natural and it felt organic and it felt real for me.
That girl will be on next week's show and we're going to yell at her. Just wanted to give you the heads up that that's going to be happening. Not a lot of gay rappers out there.
No, not at all. And, you know, I think it's because, you know, in the hip hop world, you know, growing up in the 90s and stuff, you know, when I listened to it, it was more of a dog-eat-dog world, and even, you know, even female hip-hop artists had to fight their way into that, you know, field of work. And especially, I think, you know, not only because it's me being gay, but it's me being white. You know, they've gotten used to Eminem, and then Macklemore's come along, and now we have G-Eazy, and, you know, it's becoming common for white people to be rappers. But, you know, it's not common whatsoever for a white gay person to become a rapper. And I think that, you know, I'm here, you know, one, because music is my life and this is what I want to do, but also to represent the LGBT community in the rap world as a white gay person.
There you go. There you go. All right, well, let's get to it. Tell our listeners all about this single, Live Out Loud.
I absolutely love this song. And even if it weren't my song, you know, I think that I would be, you know, I would draw to it because, you know, I sat down after the tragedy of Orlando happened. I was really upset by it. You know, I have friends in Orlando and, you know, I was glad that they were all safe. And, you know, it just upset me because performing in bars and clubs here in Atlanta, you know, I kind of, you know, it was like, you know, what if that happened to me, or that could have happened here, or, you know, something like that. So it just really hurt me and it affected me. So I went home and, you know, I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I used my only expressive outlet to write a song just to spread love and happiness back into the world, because I felt like that's what we needed right now. Instead of all of the hate and all of the worry and all of the, you know, what are we going to do now? You know, listen, we've come a long way, and you only have one life. And in this life, our people, you know, Marsha P. Johnson, she fought hard for us to be able to have pride, and she fought hard, and everybody else that came after her, you know, she fought for all of us to live life how we are right now. The same-sex marriage being passed last year and everything, I just felt like there's not a better enough time for an LGBT artist to have a song about just living life and being free of every single negative entity in anybody's life. You know, and I feel like once I sat down and I wrote that song, not only did it connect to me, but it connected to anybody, no matter if they were LGBT or if they were straight or if they were black or whatever. It just connected to people, because ultimately the song is about getting through life, and every single person gets through life. And I feel like this is an anthem for that.
I love it. I love it. You performed it the other night. Is it fair to say that perhaps you got a little emotional performing it for the first time?
Yeah, I did. Once the producer, he's the president of Big Show Entertainment, once he announced me, and I just felt all of the emotions. And, you know, when we were recording it in the studio, once I got all of the pieces down, all of the vocals down, and it wasn't even mixed or mastered yet, I just cried because, you know, this was something that put my heart and soul into. And, you know, I haven't had an original song out yet, you know, on iTunes or, you know, all music distributors. I haven't had that yet. You know, I've gained my, you know, recognition from posting videos online and of remixes of popular songs. And, you know, that's kind of how I got my start and how I got people talking was, oh, you know, this guy is making this remix of this song that I've heard before, but he's done it in a way that I haven't heard anything being done. And, you know, once I had that original song, you know, because it was my story, it was my beat, it was my everything, you know. I wrote the whole entire song myself, and all of the vocal components, that was me, you know. I didn't have anybody else, and, you know, just to be able to showcase this work as, you know, this is who Jay Tyler is, that was very emotional for me, because I'm so passionate about my music that once I have this original song, it just, it made my heart completely happy.
What can we look forward to with this video coming out next week?
So I went down to Atlanta's Krog Street Tunnel. It's this area of Atlanta that's transitioning into this art scene, and it's very, very artistic and creative, and, you know, everybody goes down there with spray paint and just spray paints, you know, paintings and this and that, and you know, I think that collectively as a city, or as a, you know, bunch of creative people, having that as the location for the music video is perfect, because it showcases not only myself, but it showcases everybody else's talent behind me. And I wanted to represent that in, you know, not just here is a rapper who's performing against, you know, this, or recording a video against this background. No, once you look behind the background, it's not just me rapping, but it's all of the art and all of the representation of Atlanta. I wanted to do something like that just to show that, you know, it's very eclectic. You know, everybody's creativity comes together to make such a beautiful thing. And so that's why I went down there to record and shoot the music video. And I'm so excited for it. It's definitely, definitely going to be just a very stupid video, to where you're going to look at me and you're going to be like, yeah, he's, you know, he's living out loud and he's living life. And that is exactly the message that I wanted to get across.
Look at that. Good stuff. Tell our listening audience where they should go to follow all the amazing things that you're doing.
So I mostly post on my Facebook page. It's Jay Tyler. It's J period space Tyler. But, you know, I go on Instagram and Snapchat, Twitter, and I just have my website that was released the day of the announcement of the song. So it's jtylermusic.com. And there I'll start selling T-shirts and start selling all of my merchandise there. And you know, now I'm proud to say that you can get my song on iTunes and Spotify and wherever else you listen to your music.
There it is. Look, we can think of nothing better to tell our listeners than living out loud. We want everybody to live out loud. We, of course, want everyone to go download the single. You're doing great stuff, my friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you so, so much for having me and for letting me get to express my art and, you know, help everybody live out loud.
On one condition, that you keep doing it.
Oh, thank you. I definitely will. I'm not going to stop right now.
Yo, I'm living it up, I'm living it. Got one life, one shot to make a difference. You better do better, put the pedal to the metal. Put the one to the step like Missy and Sierra. Cause life is but a green light, like it's in stone and there's no rewrite. Life is a movie, better get the scene right. Okay, I'm just gonna really kill it in the meantime. Look, when I go on, yeah, I go off. When I'm rapidly, I ain't trying to show off. I'm just going with the flow and I'm flowing. Never taking a no when the crowd starts rowing. But this is a life that I'm living. Everybody talks, but not everybody listens. Here's to the hopers and the dreamers. You just gotta live out loud, break the speakers. I'm living it up, oh, I'm living it. I'm living it up, oh, I'm living it up. I'm doing it up, oh, I'm doing it. I'm doing it up, oh, I'm doing it up. I'm turning it up, oh, I'm turning it. I'm turning it up, oh, I'm turning it up. I'm living it up, oh, I'm living it. I'm living it up, oh, I'm living it. Ooh, give it up for the believers, the real go-getters, the driven to achievers, the ones that people doubted and they proved them wrong. This is your anthem, this is your song. Don't let anybody ever tell you what you can't do. You have the vision and this is your view. So look past the negativity and see the truth. The only one to hold you back is you. You. Live life to express, not impress. I told them nothing succeeds like success. Be free, there's no time to second guess. I'ma be me, and I couldn't care less. Cause this is a life that I'm living. Everybody talks, but not everybody listens. Here's to the hopers and the dreamers. You just gotta live out loud, break the speakers. I'm living it up, or I'm living it. I'm living it up, or I'm living it up. I'm doing it up, or I'm doing it. I'm doing it up, or I'm doing it up. I'm turning it up, or I'm turning it. I'm turning it up, or I'm turning it up. I'm living it up, or I'm living it. I'm living it up, or I'm living it. Oh, oh. Tiger, I kill it with the flow, set the beat on fire, and it's down to the wire, so you better start living it up to the higher. Celebrate daily, each time you awaken, you get another shot to do great and be amazing. And isn't that amazing? Let's go!
L-I-V-E.
I'm living it up and I'm me.
L-I-V-E.
I'm doing it up and I'm free.
L-I-V-E.
I'm turning it up and I'm me. I'm living it up, oh I'm living it. I'm living it up, oh I'm living it up. I'm doing it up, oh I'm doing it. I'm doing it up, oh I'm doing it up. I'm turning it up, oh I'm turning it. I'm turning it up, oh I'm turning it up. I'm living it up, oh I'm living it. I'm living it up, oh I'm living it.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we do have time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all the latest LGBTQ news out there. Well, the name of the game this week, for me at least, and a ton of other folks here in Northeast Ohio, it was all about Cleveland Pride. National headlines. I perhaps had a small part in that play, but oh my gosh, it was crazy. So let me tell you the story. I'm excited to tell the story, and then I will have it down recorded for all time, at least from my perspective. Last Thursday, I was actually volunteering at the LGBT Center here in Cleveland, Ohio. It's a wonderful organization that has all of these community meetings and community groups and really just there for the community. And during the summer, I volunteer there. I work the front desk, and I'm happy, happy to do it. I love answering those phones, and it's amazing what people call in with. I mean, people are really cold calling people who are very much in need, are in need of support, in need of resources. So an amazing opportunity for me. So I was sitting there last Thursday, and the executive director called me into her office, and I thought I was in trouble, but there was nothing I could have done wrong. So I'm not sure why I immediately went there. That's for a therapist to figure out, not for all of us. We'll do that another day. She called me in and asked for help, if I could pitch in a little bit and help write a press release. And I said, sure. I mean, that's what I do. I'm good at communication stuff. Yes, let's write a press release. What are we writing it for? Well, it turns out Cleveland Pride had been canceled. So here's the backstory. Cleveland Pride here is organized by a group called Cleveland Pride, Inc. It's a group that is separate. It's a 501c3 that is separate from the LGBT Center. It is not the LGBT Center. It is a separate group with a separate board. Well, they issued a press release for me, seemingly out of nowhere, because I was not in the loop on this, announcing that Pride had been canceled. Just totally and completely canceled. It had already been moved back 2 months to accommodate the Republican National Convention. As you'll notice, an August 13th Pride, not during Pride Month. But here in Cleveland, that's how it had to happen because we had to avoid the RNC. So they put out a press release, Cleveland Pride Inc., and this is what they said, quote, because of the changing social climate, Cleveland Pride did not have enough time to engage in the development of awareness programs and training that we believe is critical in today's environment. That's all it said. Changing social climate. Nobody knew what that meant. So as I was sitting there in the center and I was working on this press release, it just started hitting me like, this is crazy. An entire city's Pride has been canceled. And it's the city I live in and that I have come to love. Even in my 3 short years here, I love Cleveland. It's an amazing place to be. And it's a place that's very much in the news for the RNC, sure, for the Cavaliers, absolutely. The gay games were just here a couple years ago. This is a city that is on the move, and its trajectory is firmly rooted in moving up. So really unbelievable that an entire city's pride had been canceled. So I started reaching out to some of my friends in the media, a couple of my friends over at The Advocate who have been on the show, and a couple of my buddies over at The Huffington Post, and said, you guys might want to write about this. I think this might be a really big story, because you saw, once the news broke here in Cleveland, people started going a little bit nutty, as they should, saying, are you kidding me? How did this happen? Now, there's a whole backstory here that I'm not even getting into because I don't know anything about it. Apparently, some of the folks who are involved with Cleveland Pride, in particular their president and CEO, there's a lot of lore surrounding him. I know nothing about it. I've never met the guy, so I'm not saying anything else about that. That said, big story here. It was a big story. People all over social media were just dumbfounded and angry and upset and shocked and all these different pieces. And I think the most surprising thing for me was figuring out that, oh my gosh, I'm pretty shocked too, and I'm pretty upset. I've never actually been someone, and I lived in New York City for 8-9 years. I never went to Pride once. I just kind of felt like, I don't need this one day. I have Pride every day. I've always been extraordinarily privileged. I've always had the opportunity to be out, both in the workplace and my family, all over the place. So I just never was big into Pride until I moved here to Cleveland, and in my third year, last week, it was taken away from me. And it was an ambush. They came out of nowhere and canceled it. Well, one of my friends at the Huffington Post said, well, you write it up. You're there. You can write it up better than we can. And so I sat down, and with my partner's help, I wrote it up pretty quickly. I wrote a piece called Cleveland Pride Was Just Canceled and It Hurts. So I typed it all up. I just typed out my thoughts, and some of my thoughts, I'll just let you know, was that it's inconceivable to me. And here are the reasons why. This is what I said. The cancellation of Cleveland Pride is inconceivable, given that we just hosted the flippin' Republican National Convention last week. Protesters and protesters with many, many guns converged on Cleveland from all over the world with focused intensity and angst. Trust me, Cleveland Pride did not present a more challenging social climate than the RNC. The cancellation of Cleveland Pride is inconceivable, given that there is a citywide celebration this weekend to thank Cleveland for hosting the RNC. Post-RNC Cleveland is suddenly not ill-equipped to handle large events. The cancellation of Cleveland Pride is inconceivable, given that Cleveland just hosted the gay games only 2 years ago. Have we suddenly forgotten how to organize gay people? The cancellation of Cleveland Pride is inconceivable, given that Cleveland took less than 48 hours to plan a parade last month to honor our beloved Cavaliers. Over a million people showed up. Over a million. Lest you think that Cleveland has become a gay mecca, let me assure you, the Cleveland Pride Parade was not about to draw over a million people. And finally, the cancellation of Cleveland Pride is inconceivable, given that cities all over the country have been celebrating Pride post-Orlando for months now. What on earth is different about the social climate in Cleveland? So I typed this all up, and my partner read it, and he had some suggestions, and I started getting really antsy because I just wanted to get it out there. I wanted to get my thoughts out there and be done with it. And then I clicked submit, and we went out for a run because I figured nobody's really going to see this. Went out for not a very long run. We were out for maybe 30, 35 minutes. Came back, and one could argue that my computer had blown up. I cannot even begin to express to you how this story went everywhere, which was not what I thought was going to happen at all. The Huffington Post put it as their lead story on the Queer Voices section, and it just went everywhere. So the next couple days were pretty intense for me. Did a lot of media calls, did some interviews, just kind of was all over the place just saying, yeah, the cancellation of Pride stinks. And the Cleveland Pride Inc. started getting very upset. And some of them started saying some not very nice things about me, which I didn't appreciate. Just, you're the worst reporter ever. Okay, I'm actually not a reporter. Well, you're the worst journalist. Also, I'm not a journalist. I'm just a guy who had some thoughts on the Pride, the LGBTQ Pride Parade and Festival of an entire city being canceled. And those individuals who need it most, those individuals for whom it was going to be their first Pride. Or maybe this is the only day the whole year where they get to be their authentic and realized, fully realized selves. And there was something in that original press release that canceled Pride that gave a shout out to, we should be feeling pride every day. And I feel that that's extraordinarily condescending and short-sighted. Now, yes, of course, we should be feeling pride every day. Every day of the week, we should be proud of who we are. But there are all of these factors in our society that keep us down. We know that. We do not have full equality as LGBTQ citizens in this American society. We do not. That is a fact. We are not protected in the same way as all of our other straight brothers and sisters out there. That's not up for debate. It's a fact. And so to have this one day of year where we can be around all of the other people who are in the same boat and be in a community and see, hey, we're not alone. We're going to celebrate. We're going to be seen. We're going to be visible. We're going to be validated. Yeah, that's a big deal. So of course, let's feel pride every single day. Absolutely. I'm a fan of it. But that doesn't negate the importance of pride, the actual day. Well, the end of the story is a really happy one. The LGBT Center of Greater Cleveland picked up the event. They have planned a new event called Pride in the CLE. We call Cleveland CLE here. Pride in the CLE. The press release announcing this new event just went out this week. There are two different components to this day. There is a march. It's just a feet on the ground march. There are no floats. We will just be walking together, and we will be walking together to the festival, which is in Public Square, which is kind of our version of Central Park. It's our centrally located. It's not this huge forested area like New York City Central Park, but it's our Central Park. It's right downtown. It was just redone in time for the RNC. It's a beautiful space. I love being in that space. And that's what's going to happen. And already, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people have RSVP'd, and we hope that thousands of people show up. And it's really quite incredible. This was a group of people who came together last week. They just put people together on Sunday, and by Wednesday, they had put this together. And that goes to show you what a group of committed people can do. People who wanted to save Pride. And Cleveland Pride has been saved. So I will absolutely and without question be doing an episode from Cleveland Pride on August 13th. So I'm excited to do some interviews just with some people on the street. Why are they there? What are they excited about? And so that is going to happen. Check out that August 13th. That is everything that has happened with Cleveland Pride. But, you know, I suppose it's possible that there's other news out there. So let's get to it. Katrina Pearson, she is the official spokeswoman for Donald Trump. Well, some tweets that she has previously tweeted have now come to light. Back in 2012, she tweeted this, "Gay is not normal, accept that." She claims now that that was a harmless tweet. She was working for Ted Cruz's U.S. Senate campaign at the time, and she was responding to a Twitter user who asked her about same-sex marriage. And that's what she said. Gay is not normal. Accept that. Yeah, not good. Not good. Now, this comes up a lot when we are dealing with politicians, or I remember a few months ago we were talking about a judge, and I don't even remember which state the judge was in, Wisconsin, something like that, where something that they wrote years and years and years ago, some case decades ago, comes to light. Yeah, that's not the case here. This is just 2012. Well, Katrina Pearson provided BuzzFeed with this quote. She said, "It was a long reach to go back to 2012 to create a new hit piece and call it relevant." No, 2012, really not that long ago. You know, we can talk about two different times in society as of late when we talk about LGBTQ public perception, right? It's changed quite a bit in the past 5-6 years. 2012, that's after when it really started changing. So for her to say, you know, gay, not normal. She went on to say, she tweeted, "Even getting, quote, married in a church doesn't make it a marriage." She was asked by a Twitter user, "By the way, in the state of Texas, all marriage is against the state constitution, even heterosexual ones." And she replied, "You will never get acceptance, but you could win coexistence. Gay is not normal. Accept that." So that is someone who is affiliated with the Trump campaign, not just affiliated, but a spokeswoman for the campaign. So again, gays for Trump. No, no, He is not for you. Hey, you know who is for you, though, but you can't vote for him this year? That would be Joe Biden. We love Joe Biden. The vice president once again showed LGBT allies how to model support. This time around, he tweeted a photo this week taken when he officiated the wedding of two men who were White House staffers. The internet went wild for the image. It was taken when Brian Motzler, director of Oval Office Operations, and Joe Maschi, a trip coordinator for the First Lady, got hitched at a ceremony held at Biden's own home. They reportedly asked the vice president for the honor. President Obama and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have yet to officiate a same-sex wedding, but Joe Biden, he has done it. We love it. It's such a beautiful picture. So, well done, Joe Biden. And also well done, Seattle. Seattle. The Republican platform states that parents should have the final say on therapy for their children, a plank widely interpreted as endorsing ex-gay therapy, which we talked about earlier on this show. But the number of local governments that just don't agree, it just got larger. The Seattle City Council this week approved an ordinance barring licensed healthcare providers from subjecting anyone under 18 to ex-gay therapy, sometimes called conversion or reparative therapy, designed to turn LGBT people straight or cisgender. Every major U.S. healthcare organization has termed the practice not only ineffective, but harmful. Councilmember Lorena Gonzalez, the ordinance's chief sponsor, said this, quote, "Being gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer, or transgender is not an illness, nor is it something that needs a cure." The council passed the ordinance by a vote of 9-0. The Seattle ordinance provides for a fine of $500 for the first offense and $1,000 for any violation after that. There will also be misdemeanor charges for advertising conversion therapy. Seattle becomes the 10th, only the 10th jurisdiction to enact such a ban. They join California, New Jersey, Oregon, Illinois, New York, Vermont, and that's it for states, but also Cincinnati right here in Ohio, Washington, D.C., and Miami Beach, Florida. Seattle may be one of the nation's most liberal cities, but support for conversion therapy bans have crossed ideological and partisan lines. The Illinois ban, for instance, was introduced by a Democratic lesbian legislator from Chicago, Kelly Cassidy, but signed into law by a very conservative Republican governor, Bruce Rauner, who has opposed Democratic lawmakers on many other issues. So, well done, Seattle. It is so important that we get these conversion therapy laws on the books. We have to ban this practice. It not only does not work, but it actually does harm. Really and truly, it does harm. Last story for you. The U.S. Supreme Court this week ruled that a school can temporarily block a trans student from using male bathroom facilities during a legal battle over trans rights. The highest court in the U.S. put on hold a previous ruling from a lower federal court, which said the student, Gavin Grimm, who's 17 years old, should be allowed to use whichever facilities he chooses. This is the first time a lawsuit around trans rights has reached the Supreme Court in the United States. 5 out of 8 justices on the Supreme Court voted to stay the ruling from the U.S. District Court in Norfolk, Virginia, which was made in June. The Virginia court in June ruled that Grimm must be able to use the men's facilities in his Virginia high school. The court ruled that the school board must allow him to use the toilets corresponding to his gender identity. Now, this is not as bad. It's pretty bad, right? Like, we did not want the Supreme Court to decide this, though it's a little bit confusing, and it's mostly because, yeah, the Supreme Court, not at capacity right now. How has that dropped off our radar? How have we not been shouting from the rooftops a million times over during this presidential season, "Hey, Republicans, you guys are the ones blocking us from having a full Supreme Court"? And having a full Supreme Court right now would have made a difference on this case. Very frustrating. Very frustrating. So if you're involved in politics, remind people, hey, it's the Republicans who are blocking us from the actual judicial process outlined in the Constitution. And we will go something like 6-7 months, I think it's even more than that, without a full Supreme Court. Not good. Not good. And that, my friends, is it for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Thank you guys for listening. Get out there. Go use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. Whatever it is that you do best, go do it. Whether you are following the route to become a therapist or you are taking up rap, whatever it might be, go use your voice to make a difference. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?